You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
In a new documentary called My Perestroika, five former classmates give us a glimpse into what life was like in the Soviet Union during the final days of communism. Boria, Lyuba, Andrei, Olga, and Ruslan share their personal stories, bring to life the days of perestroika, and how things have changed for them since. The film, which was directed and produced by Robin Hessman, reveals a Russia rarely seen on film, where people talk frankly about the positives and negatives that have resulted from the fall of communism. It's being shown as part of the new director's new film series this week at the Museum of Modern Art and at Lincoln Center. And I'm very happy to welcome Robin Hessman to our show today. Hi.
Hi.
The words I remember from the Gorbachev transition are glasnost and perestroika. What are the differences in their meanings?
A glasnost was used to refer to the openness, the documents all of a sudden being published, things that could be said publicly that hadn't been allowed before. And perestroika was more Gorbachev's economic policy of restructuring society and change. And the film is called My Perestroika because it's not only how these five subjects lived through that period, but it's also the changes that they themselves go through as individuals.
They also had to restructure. Some for their betterment and some for the worse. I recently talked to a woman who'd written a book about how tough life was when she was growing up in the Soviet Union, and a number of listeners complained that they felt she was exaggerating, that in their experience when they were growing up there, their childhoods were rather happy. They didn't know any better, and they thought it was great, and they thought it was actually a lot better than the West.
Well, that's one thing that I think the film does capture, that childhood is childhood, and childhood in the Soviet Union was often just a simple, wonderful experience. Children had summer houses. They would go mushroom picking with their family. They had friends, and the images that we saw of the Soviet Union aren't really representative of normal everyday life.
Of course, the images they saw of us weren't either.
Absolutely.
Did they believe all the propaganda?
Some people did and some people didn't. And that's also one thing that even with the couple, Borden and Lyuba, married couple, they grew up on opposite sides of the street from each other and in very, very different families. Lyuba grew up in a family that believed everything, and she would salute the television if the Soviet anthem played, and her family was grateful for all of the opportunities that Soviet power gave them. And Borda's family, as a half-Jewish intellectual family, would try and get the BBC if it wasn't jammed, and had a more skeptical relationship to everything.
And so, yet they wound up together.
And they did wind up together. And for Lyuba, the transition of perestroika for her was extremely profound because she really had believed everything, and it took, she says, even literally people shaking her to say, open your eyes, look around, everything isn't the way that you were taught.
Well, they're growing up at the same time. They're going through the normal transition of high school into adulthood at the same time that the country is going through these traumatic changes.
And that was one thing that was so interesting for me about, I suppose, my generation of Russians who had completely normal Soviet childhoods with no indication that anything would ever change. And then they are going through their own transformations of adolescence when the country is changing so rapidly. And then they graduate from college and they're thrust into a brand new post-Soviet society with no rules or models to follow, and they have to try and figure out their way.
In the past, you could be thrown into jail for being an entrepreneur, for being a profiteer. Now, suddenly, that was the way.
Exactly.
You lived in Russia in the 90s. What were you doing there?
I lived in Russia from about 1991 to 1999, and I first went as a freshman in college, my second semester of freshman year. I arrived in Leningrad, the last year it was Leningrad, in January to study the language. And then I wound up staying for the summer and working at the Leningrad Film Studios. I went back my junior year to be a student at the Moscow Film School. And the Moscow Film School was such an incredible experience that I decided to stay, and I did their five-year directing program. And that eventually led to producing Sesame Street in Russia, the Russian Sesame Street. So then one day I looked around, and my entire adult life, 8.5 years, had transpired in what began as the Soviet Union and then became Russia.
Well, do you think that your training in the Moscow Film School was all that different from what you might have gotten if you'd gone to NYU or to UCLA?
Well, I don't know firsthand, but I think it was, on one hand, certainly technically it was. We were shooting everything on 35-millimeter cameras and editing on old flatbeds from the 30s, and the film school had 7 or 8 movie theaters, and they would give you, as editing class, these huge 35-millimeter cans of films to recut Eisenstein's Cave of Mexico or recut Cabaret or play with Visconti's The Damned. And I don't know...
And you improved them?
I couldn't say we improved them, but it certainly was fascinating to see how questions and choices of cuts from scene to scene worked.
Well, you were a foreigner living through this, so your experiences were similar but not the same.
Definitely. And that made me be in a sort of insider-outsider point of view also in the process of making this film. I didn't have the childhood that they have, but I did leap in and join them at a certain point when I was 18. And for my peers, childhood really wasn't that long ago. So even all those years in film school, I heard a great deal about what it was like growing up. I heard the songs they sung and the games they played and what school was like for them.
Well, how did you wind up with these five subjects? Were they people you knew when you were living there?
They were not people that I knew. That would have been probably a more limited view of the art and film world. And I started thinking about this film as soon as I moved back to the States in 99, and didn't begin working on it until a few years later. And I went to talk to a wide variety of people of my generation in the very beginning, and as I was figuring out how I would tell the story of this age group.
And you could have told it the usual way, talking to historians and former leaders or current leaders, but you decided not to.
Well, I think that this very intimate, personal, on-the-ground point of view is something that we don't get that much access to. And these were the stories that I thought would be more unusual and interesting. And it was also the experiences that I saw firsthand.
Well, while I was watching, I wondered whether everyone made home movies in Moscow during those years, because you have films of pretty much all of their childhood.
I was extremely lucky in that. I had intended in the beginning to have a lot of home movies because the propaganda films that we would see or official images of the Soviet Union are really nothing like the warmth and intimacy and personal life that home movies in general can capture. So from the beginning, far before I actually met Borda and Luba and the other subjects, I was putting out calls and asking friends of friends if anybody knew anyone who had an 8mm home movie camera. And they were not that common. And the first day that I met Borda and Luba and was telling them about my idea for this film and saying I really want to incorporate home movies, do you know anybody in the world who took home movies? And Borda opened up a closet and there was a stack of films. And his father, who was an engineer, had just been an obsessive amateur home movie taker. And luckily for me, not only filmed his own son, but even went into the school to film the classmates. So there is footage of all the people in the film as children growing up.
My guest is Robin Hessman, who's director and producer of a film called My Perestroika, which is being shown this Thursday at 6:15 at the Museum of Modern Art, and then on Sunday at 3:30 at the Film Society of Lincoln Center's Walter Reed Theater in Lincoln Center. Ticket information is on our show page at WNYC.org. Have you shown the film in Russia?
I have only shown the film in friends' living rooms to the people in the film and to a few of my friends last fall. It premiered at the Sundance Film Festival in January, so it hasn't been widely shown. And I did promise them that it would not be widely broadcast on television, but I imagine it will go to some film festivals there. And I don't imagine that any television station in Russia would want to show it necessarily.
But I don't know why not. I'm sure that these experiences aren't all that different, other than a few criticisms of Putin. There's a very telling scene where one of the couples, a man who's very successful, he's watching a talk show on television, and his wife says, "Turn that off, that's the same stuff that they put on TV all the time."
Exactly. I think the first part of the film about childhood is something that would be welcomed over there, but although the degree of censorship is nothing like it was in the Soviet Union, and there is nobody is afraid of saying what they think in their home or on the street, or in some cases in newspapers and some on the radio.
Well, your kids aren't turning you in anymore.
No, exactly. But it's pretty universally accepted that on broadcast television, it's very tightly controlled what you can say.
Well, two of them are teachers. So do they have to watch what they say when they're teaching students about what happened?
Not at all. In their school, Borden and Luba both teach at School 57, which is a somewhat special school. It used to be a math school. It still has a strong math bent, but also history. And it's probably the equivalent of a magnet school. And they never censor themselves. They say it like it is. But there is a trend right now in the country where textbooks that were given prizes in the 90s are now taken out of the school and have the stamp of approval of the Ministry of Education rescinded. So there is a trend of the rewriting of history, which is such a common recurring theme in the Soviet Union and in Russia, that there's a saying that Russia has a very unpredictable past.
Well, for somebody like Lyuba, that couple, who was an obedient communist girl, the transition must have been particularly difficult. Some of the others who were looking for change must have welcomed it a bit more.
I think for her it was really profound and eye-opening. She tells stories of fights with her parents and a story that's not in the film, of going to see an exhibit with Borden when they were students and dating, of the Soviet occupation of Latvia, of the Baltics. And as children, she had been taught that the Baltics enthusiastically joined the Soviet Union. And it was really, I can't say in any of her stories there's anything upsetting. It's more amazement and astonishment. And she ran to tell her student class, she was a student teacher, to tell her class about this incredible exhibit they should see. And her supervising teacher at that point, this is probably 87, 88, clamped her hand over her mouth and said, "You can't say these things." And that was right in the period of transition.
Some others who you would have thought would have welcomed it chose to live in the margins. Ruslan, the musician, ex-punk rocker, he barely survives. Does he look back at the old days with some nostalgia because it gave him a cause, something to fight against?
Well, there is a degree of nostalgia, I would say, in all of them for their childhood, but Ruslan in particular has had a hard time adjusting to the changes in values. And this is something that I saw as I first got there as a film student on a daily basis changing, that if someone in the dorm got a CD player in 1991, they were looked at as maybe being morally or ethically suspect, and their values weren't very good. And when Ruslan, first of all, there's always the idea of a musician wanting to play for the music and the art and not wanting to sell out. But in his case, it's a little bit more profound, I think, than musicians in the West that deal with that struggle, because he does feel that the values of society, of integrity or friendship, and certainly in the band that he was in, have all fallen on the wayside.
Do you sense a disappointment among people in Russia that things haven't turned out a bit differently?
I think it depends on the generation. This generation that were in their early 20s during the coup of August 1991 and really felt that the changes were at risk, and that when the reforms, the idea of reforming would continue, felt this immense euphoria that things would continue to change for the better. The 60ers, the people who had been young during Khrushchev's thaw, had already experienced that hope and excitement and then disappointment. And then the people now who are in their 20s and don't even remember the Soviet Union, they have a very different experience at the same time.
Two of the other people in the film, Olga was the school beauty. She becomes a single mother and has a really rough time. You would have thought she would have done well. And then there is Andrei, who is a successful businessman, but seems to be able to play the game.
He does very well, but he of course is also dissatisfied. I think what may be atypical in a sense of the subjects of the film is that they do, because I was asking a lot of questions and probing about how they feel, they may have expressed the aspects of dissatisfaction. He's not dissatisfied with his life whatsoever, but certainly he too wishes that things had turned out a little bit differently.
Well, do you think that if you went around with a camera on the street and asked people do you wish things would have turned out differently, that pretty much everybody would say yes?
No, I don't think so. Again, it does depend on who the person is and their age, but there's
and whether your name is Vladimir Putin.
Exactly. And there is certainly, I would imagine, on the street a degree of suspicion that people would greet a camera with that I didn't experience getting to know these people very well and being in their homes. But there also are incredible changes that have happened for the better, freedom to travel, the internet, that there is certainly for in many important ways life has changed for the better.
Did people see, do you speak Russian without an accent?
Pretty much. It sounds like I'm maybe not from Moscow, but from somewhere else in Russia.
So that must have helped.
Oh, definitely, definitely.
The film, My Perestroika, will be screening Thursday, that's tomorrow, at 6:15 at the Museum of Modern Art, and then on Sunday at 3:30 at the Film Society of Lincoln Center at the Walter Reed. Ticket information is on our show page at WNYC.org. My great thanks to Robin Hessman, who directed and produced, for being on our show.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much.